Shameless Media.
Hello and welcome to our March book review episode. This month we read The House of Hidden Meanings by RuPaul for Memoir March, just something we came up with ourselves. The House of Hidden Meanings painted an intricate portrait of what it was like for RuPaul growing up black and queer in a broken home, as well as detailing his inherent belief that fame was always his destiny. At its core, this is a book about identity and RuPaul's broader influence on changing the way the world thinks about drag. Today, I am joined by pop culture journalist Eilish Gilligan and podcast producer Ruby Hall.
Hi!
Hi! How are we?
Good.
So good.
So ready?
Yes. So ready.
So ready. Guys, we're going to start where we always start, but we're going to have to do a bit of a chunkier segment here because we always start by giving some background on the author, which wouldn't feel necessary because we're doing a memoir, except in this case, it's very necessary because a lot of this wasn't covered in the memoir. Eilish, I want to start with you. I want you to kick us off for two reasons. A, I know you're a RuPaul superfan.
I am.
RuPaul's Drag Race superfan. Maybe they're different things. I'm not sure.
They are actually, yes.
Yep. And I know you know a lot about this. So take us away.
Okay. So if you read this memoir, you know all about RuPaul's origin story / rise to fame in New York City in the 80s and 90s. So RuPaul's obviously a drag queen, probably the most famous drag queen in the world, and also had a run of hit songs in the 80s and 90s as well. So in the 2000s, RuPaul continued to release music, but another project was in the works too. Around this time, America's Next Top Model was a hugely successful reality TV competition show, and it gave RuPaul an idea. What about a show that was almost exactly like America's Next Top Model, but with drag queens? And so in 2009, RuPaul's Drag Race was born.
And this is what I thought I was reading a book about.
Same, to be honest.
I just can't believe we didn't get there. It's not going to be a secret to any of our listeners that I was shattered and angry about that. I was desperate, so desperate with this book to find out more about how the business of RuPaul came to be, like RuPaul's Drag Race came to be and how this exploded. I mean, it is impossible to overstate the impact of RuPaul's Drag Race.
Oh, yeah. It is an unbelievably successful and popular show. The only other show I was thinking in comparison, I suppose, is Survivor, for longevity.
What about Housewives as well, given how many spin-offs there are? Because with RuPaul's Drag Race, there are quite a few spin-offs.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. There are quite a few spin-offs. Since that first season in 2009, there's been another 15 main seasons of the show, alongside All-Stars seasons, Drag Race UK, Canada, Down Under, Spain, France, Thailand, Italy, Philippines, Sweden, Mexico, Belgium, Brazil, and that's not all of them, by the way. If you had all the time in the world, you would still struggle to keep up with every iteration of the show these days, which is a struggle that I face.
All right, so what's your favourite season?
Oh my God, okay. So if you're going to start watching Drag Race, you should start with season 6 of the main season, but my favourite season of all time is All Stars 2.
Okay, there you go. Right. Ruby, had you ever watched RuPaul's Drag Race?
I had. I've watched a bit with one of my besties who loves Ru and the show. And I'd always watch the, what are they called? The last dance off.
The lip syncs.
Lip sync. Yeah. Lip sync till you die.
Lip sync for your life.
Lip sync for your life.
In fairness, she's not that wrong. It's life or death kind of lip syncing.
The drama of it all and the death drop. The death drop is iconic. That's RuPaul to me.
Okay, so you were a fan. So we're kind of all coming to this from slightly different angles, right?
Yeah.
Eilish, I think you came in as someone who has really tried to watch every iteration of this show. Ruby, you've come in and watched a bit.
Yeah.
But wouldn't call yourself a super fan.
No.
And I haven't watched much RuPaul at all, and that's what I wanted to learn. I think one thing, Eilish, you've taught me quite a lot is how much RuPaul is a branding genius.
Oh, yes. An unbelievable genius. And I do think we see some of this in the book
as well. Yeah, that's
true. Which is good. But specifically about RuPaul's Drag Race, the show has about a bajillion catchphrases that all play on his name, which I think is so, so smart. So, you know, for example, a queen has an outfit that has like a second more interesting outfit underneath. It's called a reveal.
So cute.
And sometimes the contestants are required to perform in a rusical.
Oh my God, stop.
It's one of those weird, rare occasions where this overt branding is not annoying to me. It's more campy and silly and fun.
Sort of sounds like one of those places where it's like you either do this properly and 100% or you don't do it at all.
Exactly.
Like, yeah. Now, I think the other thing that was really interesting to me, and I probably should have Googled before I picked up this book, but I try not to Google much about a book before I pick it up, is he has written a few books before and some of them have been autobiographies. Says to me why this one is how it is. In 1995, he wrote Letting It All Hang Out, which was dubbed an autobiography. In 2018, he also wrote Guru. You'll love that one, Eilish.
Love.
Which is, wait for it, dubbed as another autobiography and life guide. And now in 2024, we've got The House of Hidden Meanings, another autobiography. So, Ruby, we're going to jump into the autobiography because we've got a bit to talk about. I wanted to start, obviously, we talk a lot about in books about characters. I think we have to start with the character of RuPaul here. Mm-hmm. Where do you want to start us, Ruby?
I found him so fascinating. Like, obviously watching a bit of Drag Race and knowing a bit about him. But I don't know, the way he wrote with like such an ego about himself, he's so self-assured. But he also, I found that he had still like this self-awareness about like what was going on around him and how his life and upbringing had impacted him. But also I found it a little bit delusional as well at times. I loved his little introspective snippets too. And yeah, he was really taking us on the RuPaul lore. He had his own back where no one else did.
That's so true.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Eilish, what about you?
Well, RuPaul's a really complex figure. If you have been aware of RuPaul for as long as I have, which is over a decade, I think there's a lot to learn from RuPaul's business career, a lot to learn from RuPaul's rise to fame. And I think this book gave a pretty strong representation of who RuPaul is or who RuPaul sees himself to be, which I think is the main point of a memoir. So I think it succeeded in that sense. I think it was really good as someone who really loves Drag Race to have a very clear and detailed recount of his early life, because this was stuff that I didn't know about RuPaul from the years and years of being obsessed. So I think that, you know, worked for me.
Yeah, that's so fair. I mean, I think my favourite part of this book is when he spoke of his own destiny for fame. I think there's nothing I love more than a celebrity who is like, yeah, I was always destined for this. It's like absurd and ridiculous, but fun. And I do think sometimes celebrities are who they are because they believe that when none of the rest of us do.
Totally.
Like their ego is outsized.
Yeah.
And that's what you have to have. And so I quite like the sprinklings of that part of his personality throughout the book. Like he knew this is how his life was meant to turn out. He saw that psychic. The psychic told him he was going to be famous. And so he thought, yep, his mum sort of knew. And that was kind of all he needed. That and his own backbone, as you said, Ruby, was like, yeah, I'm on one here. I really liked that. Like his slogans on posters, you know, when you said before, Eilish, that the branding genius of RuPaul is very obvious in the show. Well, it's very obvious when he was younger. RuPaul is everything. RuPaul is red hot. The posters he'd stick around town.
Love.
And I imagine being his friend might have been kind of insufferable at this time.
Oh,
like,
yeah,
do you know what I mean? Like, imagine if your friend, like, imagine if, like, you were putting posters around, both of you, the city, saying, like, Ruby is everything. Bill is red hot. I'd be like, who are you?
Yeah.
But that's because he's not built the same, and that's exactly the point.
Mm.
And I think that also plays into his inherent ethos that life is a joke.
Yeah.
That life is fun and life is a joke. And I thought that was great.
I loved it.
Yeah. I like that too.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure if you're going through a hard time right now, it's probably not what you want to read. Fair enough too. I think he's consistent with that.
Yeah.
And I also think someone like RuPaul kind of can say that life is one big joke because his life also wasn't easy.
No. Oh, 100%.
So it's like if someone like him can say that, then fair enough.
Exactly. It's pretty amazing that he can look back and speak of it in that way.
Totally.
Yeah.
There's one passage I want to read you guys as well, because there were a few times I laughed out loud in this book about his stories about himself. I don't know if you guys felt the same, like the absurdity of some of it.
Yeah.
There was one passage on page 166 where I don't know where he is, to be honest. I think this is half my issue with this book, is I never knew where I was when I was reading it. I think he might have been dancing one night and the promoter and the host of the evening walked in And this is what he wrote. I'd heard about her, but I'd never seen her before. Her name was Suzanne Bartsch. She appeared as a fairy godmother hovering over the crowd as if she was floating on wires. She was lovely, energetically, not the harsh, jaded New York type I had come to expect. She was a sprite. I watched as she worked the room and then she came over to me. She studied me for a moment. You are a pop star, she said simply.
Like, that is just iconic.
Like, it's so comedic. Like, you are a pop star. Thank you, I said. It's just like, it's perfect. Like, it's funny and it's fun and I'm sure it is true. Like, I'm sure RuPaul did respond that simply. Mm-hmm. On a kind of a clunky pivot here, but one thing I wanted to talk to you guys about was the counselor who he had his first kiss with a man with.
Yeah.
That was a funny character for me because RuPaul had sort of was trying to kind of was struggling with his sexuality and wanted to talk to somebody about it, found this counselor who was also gay, spoke to him about it, was under the age of 18, had his first kiss with a man after they'd kind of been, he'd been counseled by this guy.
Mm.
And then they end up sleeping together. And one thing I struggled with is I sort of wish RuPaul acknowledged the layers here because I felt confused as to how to feel. Like, I didn't want to project anything onto him because it's his story.
Yeah.
But it is also objectively a strange dynamic.
Totally.
Yeah. It could be a strange dynamic. And I didn't know what to do with it. And I felt like it was sped past.
Yeah, RuPaul is very much the kind of boomer that has this idea of like, oh, well, it was a different time.
Yeah.
And I think that contributes to why that kind of wasn't interrogated more within the book.
But and then I'm like, well, does he have to interrogate it?
Because yeah,
it's like
exactly.
His story.
It's his experience.
I think I just was reading it and I was like, wait, I'm so confused. Is this who I think we're talking about here? Yeah. Like, I went back a bit because I was like, it kind of pulled me out of the book.
Yeah.
Because I think all it needed was, yes, I know this might sound weird to you, but it wasn't to me.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, just something like that. So it didn't pull me out of the book.
Yeah. RuPaul's very like, no excuses kind of thing. Like, very just like, here's how it is, here's how I see it, and that's just that, you know?
Interesting. Yeah. Ruby, what other characters stood out to you?
His relationship with his mum.
Yes.
Pulled on my heartstrings. Yeah. I actually have a passage.
Please.
I don't know. Yeah, the way he wrote about her with such conviction, she was obviously so special to him. And as he got older towards the end of the book, it was interesting how he sort of looked at their relationship at, you know, what she lacked as well, like the neglect also that his mother sort of projected onto him. But this quote I loved. My mother loved it every time I performed for her. When I go on stage now, I remind myself like a little mantra before the camera rolls or the curtain lifts. It's just mama's living room. There's nothing to be nervous about. She's going to love everything you do.
Oh,
I loved it.
Oh, the beauty of having a parent that will just love everything you do, no matter how hard she was, because she was quite a hardened character, Eilish.
Yeah, she was. I also agree with you, Ruby. I think the way that RuPaul wrote about his family was quite beautiful. And I was thinking a lot as I was reading, and especially when I was reading about RuPaul's perception of the relationship between his mother and father, I am not old enough to have done the amount of emotional processing and work that RuPaul has clearly done and has, you know, recounted throughout this book. That's what I really gained from this book overall was, you know, the result of years and years and years of processing a very difficult relationship or a series of very difficult relationships within his family. And I really gained something from that. I'm not quite sure what it was, but I've been thinking a lot about his insights on those relationships. And I think there's something very concrete there that is special to the reader.
Yeah, he feels, I don't know if this will come out funny, but it almost seems like he feels very content and at peace with where those relationships have landed in his life, no matter how difficult they were.
Yeah,
I thought the way he wrote about his mother was really fabulous. Like, I had this very clear picture of her, and I think she might have been one of the only other characters I had a really clear picture of. I could see her, I could feel her. His constant description of her world weariness, I just feel like, I love that term because I can see someone sort of beaten down by the world. And wearing that on them, like kind of having it all over their face and their body and the way they move through the world. On page 15, it was very early, he wrote of her. On page 15, there were kind of two things that I loved. Firstly, it was, I don't know if I should love this or not, but it was so descriptive, the feud between his mother and his father's sisters and the cutting up of the dress. Do you remember that story?
Yeah,
100%. But the other thing I really liked was this passage. She felt like the game was rigged against her, so she was tough, and then people were unkind to her because she was tough, which reinforced her belief that the game was rigged against her. I just was like, I can so see this woman. I can see it. And of course, the game is rigged against you. You are angry about that.
Yeah.
And then the world isn't kind to angry people. It is like this self-fulfilling prophecy.
Yeah.
And it is sad.
Yeah.
It's so sad that that's sometimes how the world works. I also thought Renetta was like my quiet hero of the book.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She totally. Was quiet in the background, but having an older sister whose couch is always there for you, who you can always be safe around. Even her marriage with Gerald when it was good, I really liked that he had that.
Yeah.
I thought the story of Gerald was nice but sad, like the description of being so entrepreneurial but it being the wrong time, or him being unable to execute his ideas and getting bogged down in drugs and alcohol. He did seem great, but again, maybe just he wasn't here at the right time, or of the right age at the right time. I don't know, for these big ideas.
Totally.
So those two really stood out to me. Is there anyone else?
Well, I was really interested to read about Lady Bunny. So
yes, tell me about this.
Yeah, I don't know Lady Bunny until I read the book.
You were like, one of the people in this book is famous.
Yeah.
And I was like, I don't know which one.
So Bunny is like a New York City institution. She is drag queen and has been working pretty much as long as RuPaul, potentially even longer, in the city. And she's never been a contestant on Drag Race, but because she is in the world of RuPaul, she's often brought up, mentioned as like a reference, or even used as like an inside joke. And I wish that we had more about her, because she's quite an interesting figure. She's very political. And if you go to her Instagram page, like right now, you can see that she's very unhappy with RuPaul at the moment.
What is she unhappy about?
Okay.
I feel like such a dill not knowing this.
This is a long story.
Did you know this?
I've heard the name, no. Basically, but I don't know the drama.
Okay. So basically, RuPaul with his husband George owns a ranch in Wyoming. And on that ranch, there has been some fracking.
Actually, yes. Yes.
Okay.
And apparently, according to other Wyoming ranchers, they actually don't have any say on whether or not the fracking occurs on their land, because under the surface is owned and controlled by oil companies. And on top of the surface is only what RuPaul and George control.
Fucking
which sounds really sus to me, but like,
yeah, you're right. Actually, you know, I'm like, whoa.
I read this in the Guardian, so you know it's probably true. But Bunny is a long-term friend of RuPaul's, and because she's very political, because she's very engaged with climate change and, you know, American elections and the voting process and all of that stuff, she was very upset about the fracking.
Right.
Yes. And has been very, very vocal about the fact that the fracking is happening under RuPaul's watch.
How interesting. And she's so present throughout this book.
Yeah. And in a way, convenient for RuPaul to write about this time in his life that has passed so many decades past now, because it doesn't bring up any present issues with people like Bunny, or I suppose that's what you get when you write a memoir about a very, very long time ago.
Yeah. Well, you're literally writing a memoir about 10 years of your life.
Yeah.
Or maybe actually, I guess he does talk about his childhood. So it's like the first 30 years of his life.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How did you feel about how Bunny was written?
Good. I mean, I want to know more about Bunny. I wish she would write a book, because I think she's an absolutely amazing figure. And sometimes those local stars, like you see them in Melbourne, you see them in all major cities, local stars that shape the scene and contribute so much to the culture of that city, but never become like a global superstar like RuPaul.
You're so right.
Those people are the ones that are holding up the local drag scene and holding up the local music scene and all of that stuff. And I want to know more about her and her life and how much she's contributed to the culture. And, you know, I want to know why she's so passionate about politics. So I wish I had known more about her from RuPaul's perspective, because he is a very perceptive person, but I might just have to wait for Bunny's book.
Well, she didn't have, like, as much as I say she was written about, like she was mentioned, I should say, more specifically quite a bit through this book. I don't think she had quite a very big presence.
No.
I don't think anybody had a very big presence outside of his family.
That was something I struggled with when he was heading to New York and the partying, the traveling, like, you know, making his name. I'm like, who are all these people? I can't keep up.
No, yeah. I think that was a big flaw of the book. Yes. There were so many characters and so many people, but none of them meant
no. I almost, that's maybe a question for you, because you are the RuPaul expert in the
room, Eilish. I know, poor Eilish.
Was he sort of like bragging in a sense? Like, are these sort of moments and people I connected with, I don't know, and opportunities I had? Would you see it from that point of view? I don't know.
I mean, it's an interesting question. I think the overall impression that I got with all the different names and places and people and it all happening so quickly, I think it was intentional in a sense that it was a very chaotic time.
Totally, yeah.
And I think he was trying to represent that and talking about, you know, very casual substance use and all of that stuff. Yes. I think it was part of the intention of the mood of the book to have all of these moving parts to give a representation of New York City in the 80s and 90s.
Yeah.
I don't know, for people like us who weren't alive at that time, I don't know that it lands particularly well.
The only other reason I can see for it is, like, you know, towards the end of the book, he did kind of get famous relatively quickly.
Yeah.
But it makes sense if you can see how quickly he can connect with people in a city.
Yeah.
And someone who can connect that well and that fast and that chaotically can climb the ranks much faster. And so it did make sense. It didn't feel shocking to me.
No. Yeah. It was a reality of it.
Yeah.
He's a network extraordinaire.
100%. I think obviously the one major character we just need to touch on before we move on to our ad break is George Ruby.
Yes. Oh. Oh, I loved when George popped up. I actually didn't know. So I know that he is with George. I knew that before reading the book. And he's actually from Perth, which is crazy.
Yeah. Oh, because you're from Perth.
Yeah.
So, you know, flying the flag.
Flying the flag. But, yeah, I didn't know that he would pop up. So when he did at the end, I loved it. Because this could have sort of, you know, wrapped up his memoir. He'd found fame. He'd found love in George. But yeah, that relationship was interesting.
I know that they kind of, he ended it with them not together. And then I was Googling and I was like, hang on, they are together. That was great.
And the over 10 year age difference too. I never knew that.
I actually do feel like we've given quite a few strengths.
Mm-hmm.
I need to be honest about one huge weakness for me. This was not a memoir to read if you knew nothing about RuPaul. And that's never been the experience of me opening up a memoir. I'm always opening up a book, not knowing anything about someone and walking away feeling like I know everything.
Mm.
I feel like I was severely disadvantaged opening this book because I knew so little of him.
I felt the same.
Yeah. It's like not letting me in. I felt quite shut out still.
Yeah, I think that's a really interesting conversation to have about the idea of vulnerability and the idea of offering a piece of yourself within a memoir and just how vulnerable that actually is, because a lot of it is quite contrived, not in like a fake way, in a design sense, I suppose. So I'm actually not surprised that you say I don't know anything about RuPaul after reading this book, because there was a sense of a wall being up.
I know about his family. I feel like the things I remember are probably between the age of like 0 and 15.
Mm.
And then the minute he left school and went to New York, everything is a blur. I have to be really honest. This might sound harsh, but like I feel like I got the same thing from his Wikipedia page.
Yeah.
Yeah, wow.
Maybe 80% of it. I think I got maybe an extra 20% on here about his family and that complicated dynamic. The rest I could get from Wikipedia because I couldn't work out at any point. There were no age references and no time references. And Eilish, I know you'll appreciate this, because when we are putting together a scandal script, I'm constantly like, and you're constantly like, what year are we in? How old are we?
Yes.
Because it roots you in the story.
Totally.
To tell a good story, I need to know where I am. And through this book, I was like, how old are you? What year are we in? I don't know where I am, so I can't follow it.
This would be a terrible resource for Scandal. Yeah.
And I think I just, that for me is the most important point of any story, signposting. Mm. And I haven't read a story with such little signposting.
Yeah.
Ruby, what do you think?
I agree. I did find it confusing at times. And then I would struggle to read it, even though I was really interested and invested. I feel like there were a lot of tangents he'd go on, or even when he was like, you know, the whole car era, him driving and like fixing the cars. I'm like, do you need this, or are you just trying to like fill up your story?
None of the trips told a different story. It was like, and then I was driving again, and then I was driving again. And none of them had broader meaning.
Yeah. So I felt the same.
Yeah. I think something that's always kind of frustrated me about RuPaul specifically is he has this like real staunch refusal to elaborate on his pop culture references. And I felt this very clearly in the book. There's names, places, songs, things that I feel like I should know because of the way that they're presented to me, but I don't. And on Drag Race, he comes down really hard on girls who don't know these pop culture references in a way that communicates the idea that, oh, well, you need to learn your history, you need to know your references and all this stuff. But I kind of feel like if you're going to write a book like this, which is ostensibly for the masses, I think, like, this is not marketed like a book for Drag Race fans, you know?
No, but no one else is let in.
No one is let in.
Okay, I have got a good example of this, right?
Yeah.
on page 189, when he's talking about his first single, Supermodel, firstly, I was someone that didn't even know that he'd released songs in the 80s. Mm. And there's a passage where he's talking about putting out the song Supermodel. Mm-hmm. And he says that his friend Larry kind of wrote the song for him and then they rewrote it, which I thought was a little interesting and dodgy. And this is how he writes of hearing Larry's version. When Jimmy, Harry and I listened to it, there were some funny lyrics inspired by Linda Evangelista's famous quote about refusing to get out of the bed for less than $10,000 a day. But the best thing about the song was the title. We took that idea, which felt like it was right in the zeitgeist, and started writing our own version, as if we were bottling that feeling of how it felt to watch those women strut down that catwalk in Milan. Do you know how long I went through this book trying to find out what the fucking title of the song was? He just told, not one point did he tell us what the title that Larry had given him was. It was Supermodel.
Was that intentional?
Well, I think it was what Eilish is saying, which is like, you should know that about me. You should know that the song was Supermodel. And I was like, I'm sorry I didn't.
That's kind of the point I was bringing up about like the ego, the bragging, all these pop culture references.
It's like you're in or you're out.
Yeah.
And I wasn't in. I wanted to be in so bad. It was so bad. Funny. I mean, I think the other thing to me is like, I felt like this was a book of so many small scenes filled with, to be honest, quite a lot of unnecessary detail that didn't tell me a big story. It felt like a list of facts without depth or meaning. And like, you just hear a story and I'm like, why did I read that? Like, what is the point of that? In page 102, he talked about Mark, who, by the way, I wanted to feel so much for Mark, but I didn't know anything about him, so I couldn't care when they broke up. Mm. They were like driving maybe to sleep together for the first time, and they'd taken acid but got stuck in traffic.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
So then they got stuck in traffic and the acid started kicking in as they were stuck in traffic. And then he was like, anyway, and then we made it there and all was fine. And I'm like, okay. Like, what was the point of me knowing any of this?
Yeah.
What else? I mean, Eilish, you can give me a strength or a weakness, but what else do you want to extrapolate on here?
Oh, man, I have so much to say.
I know, me too.
So RuPaul is very woo-woo. I think that comes across very clearly in this book. Mm-hmm. And I knew this before going in, and I knew that the book would be full of this, and I was correct. And I couldn't stop thinking as I was reading and as I was obviously watching Drag Race, because that's all I do in my spare time. I was thinking so much about a point that my favorite journalist in the whole world, Michael Hobbs, made on his podcast, If Books Could Kill. Self-help books can feel extraordinarily powerful if you're in a vulnerable place when you're reading them. But if you're going along okay, those kinds of just believe in yourself, like the destiny is there for you to grab, like blah, blah, blah. Those are going to feel a little bit hollow.
Yeah.
And I've had experiences where I've read books and listened to music where I've been really vulnerable and I've been like, this is so amazing. Yeah, like, so I'm having such an epiphany. But I wasn't in that place when I read this book. And I have been in that place before with RuPaul when he talks about like the inner saboteur on the show. I'm like, yes, like it's all connecting, blah, blah, blah. But with this book, I didn't feel that effect, which kind of, you know, made me roll my eyes a little bit.
Well, there was a lot of platitudes. And I struggle with platitudes generally because I'm like, what does this even mean? Me personally needs not platitudes. And that's not to say that I think if I'm in a vulnerable place, I think I crave like really granular truth. Yeah. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Which is probably a platitude in and of itself. Like this really vague, like. But I struggled with that. And so I think this is also why for me, this probably wasn't the greatest book I've ever read. Ruby, what about you?
Okay, well, I low-key loved the psychic reference. Yes.
I love that.
But I didn't really know Rue was so woo-woo.
Yeah.
I also, like, listened to his chat with Alex Cooper on Call Her Daddy. Mm. And watching him as well in that chat and hearing him talk about his memoir, he was very much so in that woo-woo kind of state of mind as well. I don't know if, like, I can, like, not relate because that sounds ridiculous, but maybe, like, moving to a new city and like embarking on like, you know, my career. I don't know. Like
the challenges.
The challenges, the adventures. I really felt it. So I kind of actually loved that about it. But that's just me. I'm a bit of a woo-woo girl.
No.
So.
That's great. That's why different strokes for different folks.
Exactly.
What about the writing?
I actually think the writing was pretty serviceable. Like I thought it was quite good. I actually also wanted to say that I think a huge strength of this book is the fact, honestly, the honest fact that it exists. Any memoir that covers complex Black queer life in particular and joy at the center, especially when you think about the fact that this memoir, everything that RuPaul is recounting, this incredible life, happened during the AIDS crisis. I think it's incredibly important that these stories are told, these complicated, interesting, nuanced stories from that era, because we lost it from so many people because so many people died. So I think that's a big strength.
That's such a good point, Eilish, because I think AIDS was barely mentioned.
Barely, yeah.
And I think for a community that has been so defined by that, and because it's so important to talk about, but just as equally, it's like not every community is the worst thing that's ever happened
exactly.
to them. And to see, you're so right, the joy of even just, I think, the times I could really see him and really see the scenes in this book where when he was describing meeting friends and boyfriends and other people constantly on the street.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like running into people and then being their best friend. And I was like, this is just painting a very specific scene to me, and I could see the energy and I could see the 80s, and I loved that. And I thought, God, I'd fucking flounder.
I don't know how we had the stamina. Seriously.
Oh my God, 1000%. But I could see that.
Yeah.
And there was a lot of chaos to it, as we've said.
Yeah.
The writing, as I quickly touched on, I agree. I think it was quite serviceable. I think the flow of writing was quite good. As I've hinted towards, it was just sort of fact after fact. There was this thing on page 178 where it was like, talking about Larry starting a party. So it's like, Larry T started a party at The World, a club in the East Village called Love Machine that Lady Bunny, Floyd, Lahoma and I all worked at. The next page was on 178. Larry T was starting a new weekly party called Le Palace Debuté. I'm sorry if I've butchered that. Le Palace Debuté, I'll try it again, in a building on 17th. I'm like, great. So in about 100 words, we've got him just starting two different parties, probably a sizable time apart. And I'm confused. And that was...
He was on acid, apparently.
That's probably true. And but then the flip side of this for me is like, sometimes I will bitch about a memoir saying, but you don't remember all of that. Like it's so in such granular detail. How do you remember all of it? And at least he's kind of being honest because I don't think he does.
No.
It's so confusing because I think this is what it would be like if I tried to write one.
Yeah, totally.
Any other strengths to finish up on?
I feel... Specifically, there were moments where I felt very moved by what RuPaul was saying. I know I just said that the woo-woo stuff didn't particularly land with me very well, but there were some concrete stories that I loved. Particularly, I adored that very, very early on anecdote with Ru and his sister. And his sister told him, we're having a picnic, because they were sitting in the backyard and she'd laid down a blanket and, you know, named this really special thing. And RuPaul was kind of talking about the power of naming something to give it more meaning. And I loved that. I thought that was such a special anecdote. And I think the book was peppered with things like that that were enough to keep me reading, enough to keep me intrigued.
Yeah, that's such a good point.
I have one as well, actually.
Yeah, you can hit me with as much or as little as you like.
Yeah. It was, again, with his mother. It was obviously a very intense scene at the start when she pours petrol over his father's car and threatens to light it on fire.
Yes.
In front of Ru, his three sisters, and the neighbours on the street. And this passage of Ru's really stuck with me. When I play this scene back in my memory, I see it as if I am a camera and I'm looking at me. Then I cut to my sister's shocked faces. There's a dolly shot, then a crane shot. It's spectacularly cinematic. Years later, I would understand that I had fully dissociated. I was too young to absorb what was really happening. It would have been shattering to me. So I simply left my body. And he was probably like 10 then or something, maybe even younger. But the dichotomy between Ru's dream of being on set, famous, this performer, and the imminent dysfunction of his family right in front of him. I don't know. I found that so moving. Yeah.
And I think it shows his sort of thought process from the youngest of age, which was like he is, I know we're all the center of our own worlds, but like he very much kind of saw the world through himself at the center of a stage almost.
Yeah.
And I think there's a... he says straight after that, when I kind of think of the scene of the garage and everyone crowding around, I realize now it kind of looked like a television.
Yeah.
Or something like that. Yeah. Like, I know I probably butchered that writing, but that wording. But I can kind of see how he was trying to kind of describe himself through that time.
Totally.
Are we ready for our ratings, or does anybody else have any last minute things I want to roll out?
I have one more very small weakness.
Yes.
I have this theory that, as with dreams, every recount of someone else's drug experience is very, very riveting to the person that experienced it directly.
That is so true.
But to everybody else, it's like the same story you've heard a million times.
Yeah.
And I will just say, unfortunately, I think RuPaul is not an exception to this theory.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely bang on. Oh my God. Likening that to dream stories is quite good. So true. All right, guys. I'm very intrigued as to how we're going to rate this book out of 5. Eilish, I'm going to start with you.
I'm going to give this book a 3. I read it. I enjoyed a lot of it. I felt like I learned a little bit more about RuPaul to add to my encyclopedic knowledge. And I wasn't surprised by it.
No, that's what you kept saying to me. Yeah. You were like, this is exactly what I thought it was going to be.
Yeah. And I was like, well, I didn't.
Ruby, what do you think?
I'm going to go with 3 as well. Yep. That's what I decided when I finished it. But then I thought about it more and I was like, maybe I want to give it a 4. I actually didn't like it. And a lot sticking to me. But I did find it hard to get sort of a little bit into and reading, you know, just jumping here, there, everywhere. It was difficult at times. But I think a 3, I don't know if I would have finished it too if I wasn't reading it for book club.
Yeah.
I don't know. I might not have.
I wouldn't have. I will give it a 2.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
For probably all the reasons I've said, and I want to make it so clear about the structure and the story of the book, not his story itself, because his story is objectively and subjectively very powerful and so impressive.
Yeah.
But the way this book was, I mean, there are just so many ways you could write a great memoir or biography or autobiography of RuPaul. And a lot of it includes RuPaul's drag race.
Yeah.
And I understand this is maybe the story he wanted to put out into the world, but this was not the RuPaul memoir I thought I was getting.
Yeah. Mm.
And I felt lost so much of the time when I was reading it. I had no idea where I was. Mm-hmm. So I found the story very, very hard to follow. And I think that pulled me out of it quite a lot and didn't let me think about the power of the story enough. So it's a 2 from me.
Yep.
Memoir March. Wow. How do we feel? I like doing a memoir.
Me too.
Yeah, I love a memoir.
I do too.
I think we could do it again. Memoir May, too soon? I don't know. Let us know what you guys think. Guys, that is all we've got time for. For now, thank you so much for listening to the March Book Review episode of the Shameless Book Club. Next month, we are going to be reading the highly anticipated fiction debut from Aussie author Bree Lee called The Work. Ruby, you're going to read the blurb for me, or a section of the blurb.
For sure. Lally has invested everything into her gallery in Manhattan, and the sacrifices are finally paying off. Pat is a scholarship boy desperate to establish himself in Sydney's antiquities scene. When they meet at New York's Armory Show, their chemistry is instant. Fighting about art and politics is just foreplay. With an ocean between them, they try to get back to work, but they're struggling to balance money and ambition with the love of art that first drew them to their strange industry.
Lally is a kingmaker, bringing exciting new talent to the world, so what's the problem if it's also making her rich? Pat can barely pay his rent and he isn't sure if he's taking advantage of his clients or if they're taking advantage of him and which would be worse. Their international affair ebbs and flows like the market, while their aspirations and insecurities are driving them both towards career-ending mistakes.
Guys, spoiler alert, I actually have read this book already. And it is very good. If you like, I'm just going to say it straight up. If you like reading sex, this got some good sex in it. I haven't read good sex in a lot. I haven't read good sex in a long time, nor a great romance. So this will be our one for next month. I cannot wait to hear what you guys think. This episode was audio produced by Sahani Gunatilika. We will be back in your ears next week with another episode of Stranger Than Fiction. My spidey senses tell me Eilish Ruby's on this month.
Yes.
I can't wait. Thanks so much, guys. See you soon.
Bye.
Bye.
Media.
This podcast was recorded on Wurundjeri land. Always was, always will be Aboriginal land.
Oh, hi, it's Annabelle Lee and Louis Hansen here. We are your hosts of Everybody Has a Secret.
Woo!
Woo! We are here essentially just to let you know that we drop episodes every week now. Every damn Friday morning, we are in your ears.
That is so exciting. What a time to be in your ear holes. So essentially, each episode, we unpack the real life secrets of our listeners. So this is for everyone who loves, you know, just a little bit of gossip in their lives, which, let's be real, Annabelle, is all of us.
It's absolutely all of us. Don't lie. You all love gossip. So if you want to listen to our show, please do head to your favorite podcast app and listen now.
See you there.
Bye.